Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community to prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Stop by one of its seven branches or go to mecu.com. for more information. Now, I misspoke. I called my guest Ted Howard because I just finished once again watching a video of him at the TED conference. His real name is Philip Howard, not Ted Howard. And he is pushing this notion that law is suffocating America. He's founder and chair of The Common Good, an organization that advocates reform of our legal system. He's author of a new book called Life Without Lawyers, Liberating Americans from Too Much Law. And he's written other books as well, The Collapse of the Common Good, How America's Lawsuit Culture Undermines Freedom, Our Freedom, and Death of Common Sense, How Law is Suffocating America. This was going to be a debate, but the other half of the debate could not make the show, so it's going to turn into a conversation with Philip Howard, and welcome. Good to have you with us.
Nice to be with you, Mark.
I don't mind not having a debate, do you?
No, not at all. It's fine. I'm sure that there's enough to spark both you and your listeners, so there's a lot to talk about here.
There's a lot to talk about, and I found you both what you wrote and parts of your book and the lecture you gave at the TED conference really interesting. And I want to kind of lay this out for our listeners. And you can join us here at 410-319-8888 to become part of this conversation. But very, very briefly, Philip, could you let's outline your idea and for our listeners and for a couple of minutes and give them a sense of what you're talking about, then we can expand on it.
Well, basically, unintentionally, the growth of law over the last 50 years or so has pushed down into daily choices, with the effect that people no longer feel comfortable doing what they think is right. So I'll just give a few examples, but it's pervasive throughout the society. In healthcare, doctors practice defensive medicine because they're afraid that any sick person who gets sicker might sue them, so they order extra tests to give them something to point to in case there's a lawsuit. And it's hard to measure how much that actually is because they're mixed. Sometimes they make more money and they're mixed motives and such. But it's certainly many tens of billions of dollars every year. It's a huge amount of money wasted. Teachers have lost control of the classroom because of the rise of, quote, due process, and also bureaucracy. You have to fill out forms to do this or that in public schools. And this, too, has been studied, and the studies have shown that there's been a rise of disorder that's directly correlated with the decline of teacher authority due to the fact that they're scared that they might get dragged into some administrative hearing anytime an angry parent wants to, you know, haul them on the carpet. Teachers won't put an arm around a crying child. And there's this phenomenon now where they call in the police, which often handcuff young children, literally, because the teachers don't feel they have the authority to actually grab hold of a child and restrain the child who's misbehaving. Playgrounds no longer have anything for a kid over the age of four. Warning labels, stupid warning labels on all products, you know, remove baby before folding stroller. I mean, the list just goes, you know, the list just goes on. So the society has changed. Again, almost without our noticing it, because people are scared of the law. They're uncertain about law. And law is supposed to be the foundation of freedom, not taking away people's freedom. And yet, the way it works today is that people fear it the way they might fear some tyrant or something.
You join us here at 410-319-8888 and join in this discussion with Philip Howard and me. I'd like to know if you think we have too many laws in America. Are we overprotected in ways we don't need to be protected? Does law get in the way of making things happen? And has it gotten in the way of the stimulus package? So some people say yes, and Philip Howard is one of those people who says yes in terms of being able to get things moving. And why? 410-319-8888, your thoughts about law in America. Is it too much law? Is it suffocating us? Is it stymieing us from growing as a society and being friendly towards one another? I mean, there's so many parts to this, but I mean, let's talk about first. I mean, there's the issue of laws that many people think make no sense that you're talking about. But then,
in part we have too many laws, and in part, actually, what I argue, and this is somewhat counterintuitive, we don't have enough law. If the reason teachers won't put an arm around a crying child anymore is because the judges are unwilling to say, as a matter of law, I'm not going to allow a claim of, quote, an inappropriate touching unless it rises to the, you know, an allegation of actual sexual conduct. And instead they let some parent who's just lost their head literally ruin a teacher's career by making an accusation for which there's no basis whatsoever, that 20 people were watching as the teacher, in one case where the teacher restrained a student who was hitting another student. And yet judges won't throw out those claims. And so that's an example of not having enough law. An example of having too much law is Washington, D.C. I mean, Washington, D.C. and state capital, they're so piled high with law. I mean, every year they write new laws, and they almost never take them away. So at this point, there's so much sediment in the harbor that nobody can go anywhere. So I tell this story in the CNN article I had a week or so ago. Last year, there was part of the stimulus package was $5 billion for weatherproofing 590,000 homes. Well, that would be good for the environment.
And, yep.
You know, it would stimulate the economy. Well, it turned out almost none of the money's been spent. Well, why not? It was supposed to be spent immediately, over years gone by. Well, there's a law that was actually signed into law by President Hoover in 1931 that requires for any construction contract involving federal funds, that the federal government fix the wages in each locality. So for the past year, hundreds of government employees have been trying to fix the wages in 3,000 different communities for weatherproofers. Now, I mean, the Soviet Union was efficient compared to this. I mean, it makes no sense whatsoever to have that.
So, in other words, if that law wasn't in place, then money would be in communities. People would be hired to put to do this work, and the wages would be
Whatever the market wages are, or they could say make it union wages. That's fine too. Whatever the union wages are, but the money will have been spent, and we will have saved, I don't know how much, you know, in carbon emissions, because you would have 590,000 homes. That's a lot of homes. That would be more environmentally sound.
Let me open the phones, have folks join us here. Whether we have laws in this country that are too many laws, are they suffocating us? Are they keeping us from being a democracy? I think some people I know in this station would think that's true. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Kane in Columbia, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me on. Good evening.
Good evening.
I agree with you 100% on everything. And without people like you bringing this up every day, I would have lived my whole life and never even noticed. But the biggest problem is more and more every day I hear one or two pieces of information. So I have to pose the rhetorical question, what can I do? But other than that, I just wanted to say thanks, and I agree.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, first, I'd love it if you would read my new book, Life Without Lawyers, because it actually talks about...
And you are a lawyer, if I'm not correct, right?
You know, and I am a practicing lawyer. And what the book is about is not actually about getting rid of all the lawyers. It's about getting rid of lawyers out of our lives. I mean, lawyers are important for business transactions or, you know, there are disputes that are legitimate disputes and people need to have lawyers. But people shouldn't have to, teachers shouldn't have to, and doctors shouldn't have to live their days with a little lawyer on their shoulders whispering in their ear, better not do that, better not say this. That's not what freedom is. Freedom is about focusing on your jobs. I mean, one of the most fun things about writing Life Without Lawyers was that I actually did research into the cognitive effects of people worrying about violating the law.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out it actually changes the way people think. It drives them from their instincts and experience, you know, where good judgment comes from. Do you trust this person? what makes, you know, what, is this a reasonable risk to take, et cetera. It drives them from that part to the self-consciousness that occurs in the kind of thin veneer of logic. You know, what can I do to protect myself in case this patient gets sicker? What can I, how will I prove that Johnny threw the pencil first, you know, if you're a teacher or whatever? And there have been studies on this. It makes people make worse judgments because they're second-guessing themselves. It's like, for example, a pianist can't play a piece if she's thinking about how she's hitting the notes. You can't be self-conscious and actually get things done. And what this pervasive legal self-consciousness that's kind of crept into our lives has done is make everybody act like a bureaucrat. You know, instead of the can-do society, it becomes the can't-do society. So it's really important, I think, to the culture of us. And so I lay all this out in the book, and lots of people have endorsed it from both the left and from the right. So that's been very satisfying. And President Obama 2 weeks ago endorsed my idea for special health courts I've been working on for 5 or 6 years now.
To take it out of litigation.
Well, to put it in a reliable, less adversarial form of litigation, where it would be an expert court, where the main job would be to make sure that decisions are reliable. So a patient who's injured by a mistake would recover more quickly, but a doctor would be affirmatively protected if the doctor, you know, complied with standards of medical care. So it's very, very important in a free society for people to trust the system of justice. I can't emphasize that enough. That's why tort reform doesn't work. I mean, it works to reduce some costs, but it doesn't restore the trust that justice will defend you if you acted reasonably. And that's the role of law. Law is all about drawing these boundaries about, you know, is this a reasonable risk or not as a matter of law consistently. And if it doesn't do that and people distrust it, then they no longer feel free. It's really, again, all you have to do is talk to a teacher or go talk to somebody who's running a church or a synagogue and ask them how they interact with their parishioners.
Well,
it's really changed the way people relate to each other.
No, I think it has. I want to kind of deal with some nuances of differences that might exist and may be seeming contradictions, but let me come to those. Let me open the phones first again, though, at 410-319-8888. As we talk with Philip K. Howard, who's founder and chair of Common Good and the author of the book Life Without Lawyers, Liberating Americans from Too Much Law. We discovered him on CNN.com and on the video that was done at the TED conference where he presented. Found this idea kind of very intriguing to talk about with our listeners. Join us here at 410-319-8888. Rhonda in Bel Air, you're on the air.
Hi, good evening. How are you?
Well, Rhonda, welcome.
I wanted to say that I am a graduate student at University of Baltimore, and we have been assigned the Death of Common Sense as one of our texts. And I have to thank your guest for writing this book. It's an eye-opening book.
How so?
Oh, my goodness. Just how crazy the bureaucratic nonsense is in this country. I mean, a couple of the stories from the book that resonate with me, one is the elevator story from New York City with the nuns and how it was against their beliefs to have the electricity and the elevators, and they wanted to just help people who needed help, and they were unable to do so because they didn't want to follow building codes. The other one was the daycare. I believe it was a church-sponsored daycare, and it was something about the codes, the size of the room, and like 3 or 4 years went by, and they couldn't have the daycare because a brand newly renovated building was they were prohibited from using it because of the size of the rooms. So I just wanted to say I think it's a great book. I haven't gotten your new book, but you're really helping with my first semester of graduate school, just understanding public policy and just some of the unnecessary. It's kind of like we're handcuffed in this country in terms of, you know, once the rule's there, no one feels like they're empowered to think outside the box or make any exceptions. So I just wanted to make that comment and to thank your guest for being so courageous in his crusade for common sense.
Rhonda, thanks so much.
Oh, that's great. Well, you know, it's nothing better than to have that kind of endorsement. And, of course, when that book came out, it actually did say something that people hadn't said before, which was that if you try to make law too precise, tell everybody exactly how to do everything, it just turns into central planning and you guarantee failure. Companies end up catching the pollution at the wrong place so they don't catch it, you know, or whatever. Because life's too complicated to have a rule for everything. And you have to leave room for human judgment, and you've got to have a system in place and the authority structures that can actually sort out, you know, when people exercise their judgment in a way that should be protected and when they've crossed the line and done things that are wrong. And that's, again, what a system of justice is supposed to do, but it no longer really does that. And it's, again, it's undermining our freedom. We could actually have this discussion, just what she was saying about the rules not allowing people to do things, in the context of the No Child Left Behind law and President Obama's recent talk, if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, I do. Let me get another call in here. I do want to talk about some of the things you touched on with President Obama and let you start that. And those are some issues I wanted to raise with you at any rate. But let's get another call in here first. 410-319-8888. We'd love to hear your thoughts about where you think we've had the death of common sense in America. How do you regain common sense in America? Do we have too many laws? Are they suffocating us? And what's your favorite story about a law or regulation that just drives you up a wall? 410-319-8888. Kevin, on your cell phone, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, Kevin. Welcome.
Real quick, I'm a teacher, high school teacher. I taught in Georgia, and I came up here to Maryland. I won't mention the school system because I'm about to embarrass the school system by what I'm about to say. But anyway, I noticed that the kids weren't taking showers after gym for the most part, especially the boys. And I had a chance to go down into, you know, the boys' locker room area, and I noticed that the boys' locker room was being used as a storage place. And it was funny, I asked the director of phys ed, and they said, well, the general counsel's office had suggested that they not encourage these kids to take showers because of some of the legal issues and some of the lawsuits that they had been getting related to, you know, certain issues in reference to kids taking showers. So these kids are in an entire school, and as a matter of fact, the new schools that they're about to build won't have the room for phys ed kids to take showers, only the athletes. And I can't imagine teaching a bunch of high school kids who just come out of a phys ed school that aren't showering. And there's a lot of people who listen in your audience know what I'm talking about, what system I'm talking about, but it's ridiculous.
I mean, it said that's a pretty funky job, I would say.
Right.
Philip Howard, what do you think about that?
Well, you know, I'm not exactly sure what's motivating it, but there is this paranoia about being accused of sexual misbehavior
right. That's
no longer sexual misbehavior. It can be looking at someone or as I said, putting an arm around their shoulders or just grabbing hold of their arm or something. And you just can't run a society that way.
Yeah.
It's just so weird not to let the boys take a shower.
Yeah, I was told it.
You know, and boys have to learn to, you know, you take a shower, and then the boys don't have clothes on, and that's it, you know. And if somebody behaves inappropriately, that is to say, you know, in a sexual way, one, they should be fired, and two, they should be prosecuted. But other than that, if people, you know, it's just, again, the paranoia about it. I mean, there was a church in Maryland, just sticking in Maryland for a second, that had to spend something like $500,000. That's a lot of money for a church. It's a big church. To put in glass doors on all their doors and all their offices and rooms because the insurance company forced them to because they were scared of claims of, you know, sexual misconduct behind closed doors. So the solution was to spend $500,000 to create all new glass doors so that nobody can ever be behind a closed door. I mean, there are people who have the problem, you know, of sexual misconduct, but to change every door in the country would be really stupid. It's like chopping down every nut tree because some people are allergic to nuts. You know, it's nutty. The whole thing has really gone crazy, and now we don't have boys taking showers.
It's insane. Kevin, thanks for that call. I'm like dying to hear what school system that is. Maybe you can just write me and tell me, and we can do something with that.
Yeah, we can make fun of them.
We can make fun of them on the air.
Exactly. That's what we can do. We do need to, you know, somebody said, what can you do? Well, I mean, the listener probably can't do this. We really need a comedy series that's
yes.
based on how stupid the society's become because of all this, you know, because of this legal fear that's crept in.
It could be an interesting, I hate reality shows, but it could be an interesting twist on a reality show.
Right, exactly. I mean, you know, how people act like idiots. I mean, all across America, people are acting like idiots. They don't, you know, my favorite warning level was on a, so I went on a 5-inch fishing, I grew up in the South, so I'd while away the summer hours fishing. A 5-inch fishing lure is a big fishing lure. 5-inch fishing lure with a 3-pronged hook on the back that set on the side, harmful if swallowed.
I mean that it is insane. But those were because they were afraid of lawsuits. That people will, you know, would somebody may some idiot may put it in his mouth.
No, you know, actually, I actually looked into that.
So what was it?
Why would some? I mean, the remove baby when folding stroller is fear of lawsuits. I mean, you know, that some parent would be an idiot and fold it up like the people who. Who put the car on cruise control and then crawl into the back seat? You know, that's an actual case. Also occurred in D.C.
And they sued?
Right, and they sued, yeah. So they didn't warn them that cruise control couldn't drive the car by itself. So people do, you know, people can act like idiots. We all do stupid things from time to time, although not that stupid. But in the case of the lure, it was. They were advised to put the warning on it because the hook apparently had some hooks have some lead coating or something, and so they were told that even though most people don't suck on a 3-pronged hook, that they should put it. It's like the bags of peanuts that have warnings that say, "Caution: this bag may contain peanuts." And you say, well, I really hope so because I was really counting on the fact that I just bought a bag of peanuts.
Join us here at 410-319-8888. I want to hear your stories of the laws and regulations you think are the most ridiculous you've heard of that stymie your life, that get in your way, and just want to make you laugh or puke, maybe. 410-319-8888. We're talking here with Philip Howard about this issue. He's chairman of the Common Good, an organization that advocates reform of our legal system. And his recent book is Life Without Lawyers, Liberating Americans from Too Much Law. Do we have too much law, too many lawsuits? What would you do about that? His other books include The Collapse of the Common Good, How America's Lawsuit Culture Undermines Our Freedom, and the book that I know the best, The Death of Common Sense, How Law is Suffocating America, 410-319-8888. But there seems to be one thing you said that I, when I was watching you, the tape of the TED conference, and you talked, I think you played a piece of President Obama's State of the Union address, where he asked if China... you know, that talked about how China was going to just go past its leaps and bounds and building trains across across the country, which we couldn't do.
Right.
But the one part you attacked, though, seemed to me to be the laws about the environment and having to have the environmental analysis and things done before you could do any building. Now, that's one set of laws. If it's protecting the environment, it seems to me to make sense.
Yes, except I'm not against the environment. I'm a pro-environmental person. But what I suggested was that, you know, he said in his speech, there's no reason why China and Europe should be the first to have the fastest trains or something. And I said, well, yes, there is, because our environmental laws, which are important to preserve the environment, have evolved since they were first passed 40 years ago to a kind of no pebble left unturned process. So instead of having an environmental review process, let's say that lasts a year, you know, for a new rail bed or something, they take the better part of a decade.
Right.
And then if one person doesn't like, you know, the project, one person, just one person, they can bring a lawsuit. If they have the resources, they can keep it, they can stall it for another 2 or 3 or 4 years. So or something like anything major, you know, a new power line, a new rail bed, anything like that, it would literally be the year 2020 before anybody could put a shovel in the ground. That's crazy. That's not environmental review. That's just paralysis. And so if we need to run a society, we need to have a government where the people can actually make choices. And so, yes, we should have environmental review, and it should be particularly for projects that help the environment. I mean, so I've actually proposed, and I've been talking to some officials about this, because I'm not in this just to write and talk about it. I'm in it to actually mobilize people and make change, and I hope some of your leaders, some of your listeners will sign up on our website and join our coalition, because we're trying to build a nationwide coalition to make these changes. But one of the proposals that we're talking about now is to change the environmental law so that when the environmental administrator, the head of EPA, concludes that a project is good for the environment,
mm-hmm.
It's good for the environment, net, you know, so I'm right there, you know, it's a fast train or a new power line, whatever, that there's an expedited review up and down the chain, state and local as well, that has a limited period of time that'll probably be in total 2 years. That's not a small amount of time. It's 2 years. It gives a lot of time to review siting and all other issues. And then the project can move forward.
Well, we have to take a very short break and come right back. And we have some callers calling in. April is called in from the University of Baltimore, and Bainu from Baltimore. 410-319-8888 is the number here as we talk with Philip Howard about his work, his chair of Common Good. He's the author of Life Without Lawyers, Liberating Americans from Too Much Law, and books like The Death of Common Sense, How Law is Suffocating America. We have some people writing in who have objections to his ideas. We're going to read those and talk about that as well and get all your calls in here. From Philip Howard, I want to remind you as we go to break that the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Hospital for Children, offering primary, specialty, and critical care for all children, from the smallest babies to the biggest teenagers. For more information or to learn about their specialty outpatient locations throughout the state, call 1-800-492-5538. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We are joined this hour by Philip Howard, who is founder and chair of Common Good, an organization that advocates reform of a legal system, written books like Life Without Lawyers, Liberating Americans from Too Much Law, and The Death of Common Sense, How Law is Suffocating America, The Collapse of the Common Good, How America's Lawsuit Culture Undermines Our Freedom. The number here is 410-319-8888. People are calling in. I'm going to go right to the phones. And Apriel at the University of Baltimore, you're on the air.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. You're on the air.
Oh, wonderful. Yes, I'm from the University of Baltimore, and like the earlier caller, we are studying The Death of Common Sense this semester, too, and it was truly an eye-opener. Some of the stories, I laughed completely out loud, especially the one with the kiosk, the toilet kiosk in New York, wanting to get that and couldn't. But my question to Mr. Howard is, do you think that it's the law that's suffocating America, or is it America's expectation to use bureaucracy to manage as opposed to common sense? You know, we look to the law and bureaucracy to fix our everyday lives, and it really wasn't set up initially to function that way. So instead of using common sense within the constraints of the law, we've kind of got it reversed. So I kind of wanted to present that question to him.
You know, that's an absolutely excellent way of describing the problem. And, yes, the problem, you know, we're now in a downward spiral, because once something becomes law, it achieves a special interest group, and the special interest group is unwilling to concede anything because they're afraid that they'll give away too much or something. So in that case, New York City was not allowed to put in toilets because the toilets weren't disabled accessible, even if another nearby accommodation was made for the disabled. They wanted every you know, toilet to be disabled accessible. So, you know, you in the interest of trying to create a perfect society that accommodates everyone, we ended up getting nothing. But the caller's also right that to a great extent we brought this on ourselves. People think that we can create a legal system that will prevent any accident and prevent any disagreement. And there's this happy utopia where everyone will agree with what's fair. Well, that's not, that's just not possible. You know, and law is mainly about balance, actually. And so it's balancing different interests that compete in a society. And that's one of the important roles of law. It's not about giving everyone their rights in every situation. Rights are only the constitutional things on the edges. Most law is balance, and we no longer have the mechanism to do that, and it breeds all kinds of pathologies and expectations, as the caller suggests.
Well, you know, I'll wait. Apriel, I'm glad you joined us, and let's go to the next caller here, 410-319-8888, and Benu, you're on the air.
Yes, I have two comments. Quickly wanted to comment on the bathroom issue.
Sure.
From my experience as a teacher in Baltimore City, not defending any school system, but the reality is the paranoia is not about teachers and students. I've been in elementary school as well as middle schools where we've had four or five incidents of boys committing fellatio on other boys in the bathroom. Boys going to the bathroom with girls for intercourse. So the concern is there are very, very decadent things going on with children behind closed doors when teachers aren't around. So many times that is the fear. But my second comment is about the criminal justice, what I would call enterprise, is what I found funny today. It's interesting. I'm looking that the House Committee is reviewing to adjust the sentencing measures for crack versus powder cocaine. Right now you have 1 gram of powder cocaine. 1 gram of crack equals 100 grams of cocaine. They're saying, no, that's wrong. We know it adversely affects poverty areas. We know it adversely affects many minorities. What we'll do is, knowing that there's no legal or rational basis for this other than social stigma, we'll say, you know what, it's fair to say now it's 20-1. You could have 20 grams of powder cocaine and you will get the same sentence as somebody with 1 gram. And this is being led by law enforcement and the GOP. Law enforcement said, well, we don't support equal measures. We support 20-1. It's interesting to me that, well, basically you support a bill that will keep you employed because you get to lock up more people versus a law that doesn't even make sense.
Yeah.
That's my comment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, both of those are actually good points. I'm glad he clarified the reason for the locker. I'll circle back to that in a second. But on the same problem of too much law has occurred in criminal law. Someone once said you could indict a ham sandwich. You know, criminal laws have become so extensive. And the drug laws in particular are unfair, particularly the sentencing guidelines, because they often force people who are users of drugs to go to jail and turn them into criminals, often lifetime criminals for something that's maybe, you know, not good for them and a sin, but it's not necessarily, you know, hurting society either. So there are lots of problems. In fact, I'm going to be talking with some experts in this area about over-criminalization of law, and one of the things we need to overhaul is that. You know, you need to reserve criminal law for things that are really serious, not send people to jail for minor offenses. You know, on the thing about the schools, and this goes back to Obama, No Child Left Behind, that schools have lost, public schools, many public schools have lost the conditions for a healthy culture. And this has come from many places. In part, it's come down from the breakdown of society, but in large part, it's come from the breakdown of authority. So if a teacher in America today, or a teacher in Baltimore, if a kid says, you know, go F off to the teacher,
mm-hmm.
You can't do anything about it. If a kid comes up and puts his face in the teacher's face and says, if you tell me to do something one more time, I'm going to, you know, whip your ass or whatever, teacher can't do anything about it. And if you have a school culture where the kids all know that the teachers have no authority, then the order it's going to continue to fall apart. And then eventually you're going to have a thing where the boys go into the girls' locker rooms and have sex, you know, in the eighth grade or something, like the person was saying. So you need to kind of really rebuild the authority structures if you want to have any kind of functioning culture. And that involves not more law, but a lot less law, and the conditions in schools that allow the kids who want to learn that if for the kids who are misbehaving chronically, you can provide an alternative place for them, but you can't let them to destroy either the culture or the learning of everyone else, which is, you know, that's the tragedy of inner cities, is that most kids want to learn, and they're stuck in schools where there's no, you know, where the educators don't feel they have the ability to build the culture that allows them to.
Join us here at 410-319-8888 as we talk with Philip Howard and hear your stories about your notions of law in America. Is there too much of it? Is bureaucracy too cumbersome? Is it suffocating your life, making things difficult where it shouldn't and not helping where it should? 410-319-8888. And on that theme, Philip, I mean, there's a balance here in America we have to have, isn't there? I mean, the reason we have laws sometimes are to protect us. In other words, I had this discussion the other day with a guy who I buy my meat from, who is a farmer, and he said we shouldn't have these laws governing us that tell us how I should grow my chickens, even though he's an organic farmer. He should be able to do it the way he wants to do it, and the relationship should be between you and me. And it's like Saladin's book: everything I want to do is illegal.
Right.
And I said, but you know, but it's not about you; it's about what the corporate farms do to pollute our land, pollute our food, and pollute our waterways.
Mm-hmm.
That those laws have to be in place, which should not preclude you and I from being able to make a deal over your chicken or to buy my milk from you directly without having someone tell me I can't.
Right, and so first of all, you're basically right about that. In an increasingly anonymous society, in the old days when you had a community and everybody knew each other. Everybody knew who grew the chickens and where the meat came from and
right.
where the grain came from. You didn't need all these laws, right? Now the meat and the chickens come from people you don't know, and the food does. So we have to have laws about food. We have to have laws about the environment. So law is more important in a globalized world. We don't want toys painted with lead paint our children are going to put in their mouth, right? We need to have a agency that looks and protects us against that. So I'm not against law. I'm a Democrat. I'm not a deregulator. I'm for creating a form of regulation that actually focuses on the goal of the regulation and gives the regulator or the teacher or the principal or the judge back the authority to actually use their judgment and make the balancing judgment. Oh, okay, I think it's better to have toilets that serve 99% of the people and the other 1% who can't use them because they're in a wheelchair can go over here. Government officials need to have that authority, or the environmental person saying, it's going to be better for the environment to build the power line. We studied this, so let's go forward because that's better for everybody. You need the ability to make those common choices. And instead, we've created a legal system that obeys the lowest common denominator, and it doesn't work. So I'm not against I think we do need regulation. It just needs to be, and it'll always be imperfect, but it needs to have the chance of using, you know, judgment, common sense,
well,
not be this kind of, you know, horrible Rube Goldberg machine that's gotten built up over the years. Nobody even knows all the rules or so many of them.
I'm going to go back in a minute to talking about common sense and how we get to the place you want to get to us to, but let's go to the phones for a moment at 410-319-8888 as we talk with Philip Howard and Delegate John Cardin. You're on the line. How you doing, John?
Hello there, Mark. How are you?
I'm well. Welcome.
Good, thank you. You know, like we could talk about all these quirky bills and laws out there. I just wanted to bring up one that actually we're dealing with today in the legislature, and that is judicial elections, the election of judges. I think that, you know, for three very important reasons, we should not have judges being elected. One is money in the judicial system, that judges should not have to raise funds to run for office. Two is because politics is not really involved in judiciary. I run for office based on a political platform. People support me or don't support me based on my position. And judges are not allowed to have positions. They shouldn't have to take positions or express their political positions. And number three is diversity. That, you know, there's an issue of whether you want to be able to have judges run for office so that you can create diversity, which was one of the arguments 20 years ago in Baltimore City. At the same time, the way it should work is we have a nominating committee, nominate very capable people, and let the voters decide whether these people should stay because they're competent and good judges and have it be competitive election.
Interesting points. We'll have to do a show about that. I think that'd be a good show for us to debate. Now, how does that fit into what you write about, Philip?
Well, I think I agree with the legislator. I hope they pass that law. It's incredibly important to have people, particularly judges, because they're supposed to be impartial, is to have judges who don't feel beholden to one side or the other. And in my world, judges become more important because judges start acting as gatekeepers. And they begin making legal rulings that say things like, maybe you have a claim for your broken leg, but not for $10 million. Or they say, I'm not going to allow this claim for the accident in the playground to go forward until I think about and see briefs on what the effect of this would be on people's willingness to open playgrounds. Because if allowing this lawsuit to go forward will force everybody to close their playgrounds, because they don't want to get sued, you know, every time a kid falls down, then I'm going to make a legal ruling dismissing the claim, saying that's a risk we have to take if we want to have playgrounds. And so judges have an incredibly important role in a society, which means that we need good judges who are impartial and trusted. Trust is absolutely essential to the system of justice, as I said earlier. If people don't trust the system of justice, they're not going to feel free when they go through the day.
Let me get one more caller in here, at least, and I raise some other issues with you here. 410-319-8888. John, thanks for joining us. Carlos in Laurel, you're on the air. Carlos, you there? You got him?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
You're on the air, yeah.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for
My issue is, I don't think it's about having too many laws. I just think the laws don't have the right things to support them. For instance, why make a law to make a fine of $100 when someone's texting on their phone when they're, you know, causing accidents, taking others' lives? If the law was made that you can't text, why not make it a stiffer penalty where you would pay a $5,000 or $10,000 fine if you're caught on your phone or you're caught texting? And people would stop texting. And the other issue is with simple things like handicapped parking. You know, people who are handicapped can't get in their parking spaces because the ticket or the fine is so low. You know, if you make it a $10,000 fine, you won't find people parking in places they're not supposed to be that are for handicapped people. That's all. Make a stiff penalty to go with the laws, and people will follow a lot of those laws.
Philip?
Can you hear me?
In general, penalties should be proportionate to the nature of the crime. And so I'm not enough of an expert in either of those areas to know how big a problem it is. I generally see a lot of, you know, disabled spaces just empty, you know, and it's always tempting when it's really raining to pull into one. So, but most people don't, and I don't either, because we honor the rules. So I've never seen that as a problem. I think people do text and talk on their phones illegally, and it apparently is much more dangerous. And, you know, and one way of dealing with that is to make the fine stiffer. But those two examples don't actually get to the broader point of how much law we have and whether it's uncertain. If you went and talked to any teacher or principal and looked at the amount of bureaucracy they deal with, you would understand that it's impossible for them to do their jobs properly and follow the law. Indeed, there have been studies been done of successful public schools, and the one thing they all have in common is the principal tells the teacher to ignore the law. Literally.
What do you mean by that?
He protects them against all the bureau. Don't worry about filling out the forms. Don't worry about this process. Just do what you think is right. It's incredibly important for people to feel free to act on their instincts. And again, studies have shown that successful schools have strong leaders who say, I've got your back. You just, if you do what you think is the right thing to do and you know, and you're acting reasonably, I'll protect you.
But how did we, talk a bit about from your perspective how we got to the place we're in. In other words, how do we get from being able to have swings and merry-go-rounds and playgrounds and playing dodgeball and running around and right. climbing trees and falling out of trees and breaking our arms to not allowing that to happen? And talk about what you think happened before
well,
we get
yeah,
into what
I
clears it up.
Well, yeah, I go to this in the history in Life Without Lawyers and the other books. But basically, there are two rivers of thought that came together. But the most recent is that we woke up to these abuses in the 1960s, and they were real abuses: racism, gender discrimination, pollution, just
mm-hmm.
to name three.
Mm-hmm.
And we concluded, you know, in that evulsive decade of the 1960s, that we wanted to create a system that would make it illegal for anybody to have these bad values ever again. So we were going to make a rule for everything we can think of, and in addition to that, if anybody didn't like anything, they could go sue. They would go protect. That's where the whole idea of this modern idea of rights came from. In the old days, people didn't go around talking about their rights. They just lived their lives, right? And
mm-hmm.
that was it. Then all of a sudden, everybody's saying, give me my rights. They're pounding the table. Because the idea was we would have individuals protecting what they felt was right. But what we didn't understand is what you or I think is the best thing for me or my kid is not necessarily what someone else thinks, right? So it created a world in which the squeaky wheel became the dominant force. Everybody started, you know, every time there was an accident, how dare there be an accident? I want to make sure there's never an accident in the playground again. You know, I'm suing for whatever. And it ended up being a society where you couldn't have fun or be yourself. It was just the bad idea. We ended up not having, trying to protect against bad values. We no longer had good values.
Isn't part of the people get litigious and groups get litigious because they feel like they're not being protected by society itself? Isn't that part of the issue, though?
Well, that is part of the issue. And we definitely, you know, I'm not against, there are legitimate disputes. People do. I'm for a world where when the company does something bad, it's easier to sue them. But there still has to be a gatekeeper. You can't trust the person who's suing to get money for themselves to be right. Because they're self-interested. You know, that's why you need a neutral judge there who's impartial.
So,
but it needs to see, the judge has to see his job in part as protecting the interests of society and making the distinction between what's a valid lawsuit and what's not. That's why it's called a lawsuit. It's not a sue for anything suit. It's a lawsuit. You know, law is supposed to draw these boundaries.
So how do we get to a place where the insane amount of laws that are passed by Congress kind of stymie us from doing anything? Bureaucracy just stops businesses from growing, from people who do what they want, from, you know, building a shack in their backyard they want to, whatever that is.
Yeah.
And how do we get to that place where that begins to happen, though? I mean, because there's
I'm organizing a forum at the National Constitution Center right now with a bunch of experts from the left and the right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this is a liberal conservative issue. And one of the things that's desperately needed, not only in Washington but in state governments, is a spring cleaning. And the point of the spring cleaning is not to do what conservatives say. It's not just to do away with regulation, because we need food and regulation and pollution regulation. And so we need safe workplaces. So it's not to do it. It's to make them effective. So it's to take, like the example I had of the 1931 law that prevents the weatherproofing to happen.
Right.
Because you have hundreds of officials setting the wages, is to take a law like that and look at it and say, well, that's really stupid. You know, nobody can get anything done. We don't really need to, for the federal government to set wages when there's a marketplace for wages. Let's let the people get back to work. So let's just do away with that law or most of that law and put that principle over here. And if we want it to be union labor, we can say, Federal contracts have to be union labor. Great, that's fine. I'm not against that. But so you need to, you know, I once had someone count all the words of federal law,
mm-hmm.
binding law.
Mm-hmm.
It's over 100 million words of binding federal law and regulation. Well, you know, it's like the tax code. It's like completely, incomprehensible. Well, it probably should be, let's just pick a number, 5 million words. You know, it should be pared down 20 to 1. The U.S. Constitution is 16 pages long, and it's the most important legal document we have. It's general principles. What's wrong with having law should set goals, it should give general principles, and then give identifiable people, judges and officials, the authority to apply and interpret the law. That's how the Constitution works. That's how we should have other laws work. That's how No Child Left Behind should work. It shouldn't be this kind of detail thing where everybody's crawling through a legal maze
right.
all day long. And let teachers become professionals again. Just give them the general goals. You've got to do this that they can understand. And if you have a legal system that people can't internalize, you know, they kind of understand what's expected of them.
Right.
Then they will not act sensibly. They will fail every time.
Now, I'd be curious to talk to you after you have this conference. We'd love to have you back on to talk about that. And maybe having you or some others on when we have these discussions about laws and what we should do to have your common sense thinking as part of the discussions we have on the air. It's been great to have you on the air with us.
Yes, and please, anybody who wants to sign in or give it, go to commongood.org.
And they can go to steinershow.org and link right to commongood.org.
Commongood.org, yep.
Thank you so much, Philip Howard.
Great.
It's been great to talk to you.
Yeah, nice to be with you, Mark.
Take care. So, folks, you can find out more about that by going to our website, steinershow.org, and linking to his site and reading more about his ideas. I want to remind you that the Mark Steiner Show is made possible in part by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. And tomorrow we're going to have a rip-roaring discussion about Acorn with members and former members and others talking about the demise of the organization and what that really means. So that'll be one of our hours tomorrow that you can join us for that conversation. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. Zach Coleman is our engineer today. Our interns are Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, Richard Good, Gay Pinder, and Felicia Faison. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again and podcast any of our past shows and hear new additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.